the Honorable Hubert H. Humphrey.
Now there's going to be 60 seconds of silence, so.
Oh.
Which is the stop, this?
I'm not sure. Try it.
Welcome to the show, Senator Humphrey.
Thank you, Henry.
Senator, before we talk about some more serious things, I'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate you on your 25th anniversary in federal service as United States Senator and Vice President. That's quite an achievement.
Thank you very much.
So people on Friday night, April the 4th, the people of your party,
yes,
as well as many independents, showed it. I'd also like to congratulate you on a resolution you proposed and which was adopted unanimously in the United States Senate. That doesn't happen often.
Oh, that's right.
And you had some very unlikely co-sponsors to this resolution: Senator Robert Griffin of Michigan, Robert Byrd of West Virginia, Senator Herman Talmadge, and Senator Sam Nunn of Georgia. Congratulating Hank Allen.
Absolutely.
On his home run.
You bet.
This out of the way, let's talk about some more serious things. Senator, you appeared on the Today Show on the Channel 5 a few days ago with Bill Monroe. And Bill Monroe asked you about these stories,
right,
alleged corporation checks and whatnot, yes, from the Associated Milk Producers Incorporated. There's a story floating around in the papers concerning an alleged gift delivered to you in a limousine by a man, Mr. Mayhew, who pretended, or maybe could represent Howard Hughes, whom nobody has seen, or very few people have seen in years. So before we talk about some of the other things, I wonder if you would make a comment on these alleged contributions and monies you were given, or
yes. Well, first of all, Henry, as a candidate, I don't accept money. Campaign committees do. I've had a very, very severe rule about that. All candidates for public office, of course, do get financial help. That is, their campaign committees. You are, however, responsible as a candidate for the activities of your committee. You can't ignore that possibility or that responsibility. But the financing is done by a committee or a finance chairman or a campaign treasurer. In the instance of the Hughes case, this is a fight between Howard Hughes and Robert Mayhew. Mayhew is suing Hughes for $17.5 million because Hughes said that he had stolen him blind. Now, you get caught up in this web. And what Mr. Mayhew is trying to prove is that the monies that was given, apparently, by Mr. Hughes, that he actually gave out to some other people. Now, I don't know you, and I don't want to cause him any distress or any trouble, but isn't it interesting that when you talk of sums of money like he is, that nobody has seen it? In fact, he said he borrowed it from a casino in Nevada, that the man that he borrowed it from, he says, is dead, that when he repaid it, the receipt has been lost. You know, really, it's quite, all I can say is that it's a messy business. And to me, of course, it's sad, it makes people wonder. I've tried to lead a political life, a public life that I thought was would stand the test of scrutiny, and I believe it will, can, and should. One other thing I should like to add in this matter, and on the matter of the dairy, first of all, I want to say again, this is Hughes versus Mayhew, not Hubert Humphrey. And there are others that just because it's in the Minnesota papers, it appears it's only Hubert Humphrey. But Mr. Mayhew has other problems with other people. Any contributions that he would have made have been reported. And there were some reported. And he knows that those were reported. I noticed this morning's paper, yesterday was it, on the paper of Saturday morning it was, yes, that he said that I called him up right after the election.
And his daughter was listening in.
Yes, well, my dear friend, right after the election, I went home, went to bed. I wasn't calling up anybody right after the election. And why in the world?
You're talking about
1968. And that's so ridiculous that really I'm kind of weary of it. Now on AMPI, that's the dairy people. That's an organization that has membership here in Minnesota. It is a fact that their organization in this state did support me in 1970 when I ran for the Senate. And in 1968, some of their people, they were very small at that time, nationally, supported my candidacy. But Henry, I have been for the dairy farmers before AMPI was ever heard of. My record in support of agriculture for 90 to 100% parity price supports is so clear that it has been one of criticism, indeed, by my opposition. I didn't need any influencing from AMPI. And if they did make a corporate contribution, which their own reports now allege, they've got an internal fight in AMPI, too. There's a group that's in that threw another group out, and they're fighting amongst themselves. And one group is trying to prove that the other group is a bunch of crooks. And so they drag in a lot of different people. I see that there are at least a dozen senators that have names that have been mentioned in the states, the neighboring states are here around us, and without getting anybody else into trouble. And all I can say is that illegal corporate contributions, if they're made, are illegal. I've never accepted a corporate contribution to my knowledge in my life, nor have I ever instructed a campaign committee to do so. But what does it all add up to? It adds up to that the present system of campaign financing is a disgrace.
All right, I'd like to interrupt you right there. You say it's a disgrace.
Yes.
And still you have a member of your party, Senator Allen from the state of Alabama.
Yes.
For days now, filibustering. You are going back Tuesday, April 8th,
yes,
to the Senate. He's still going to filibuster because he is against public financing of campaigns. You and Senator Mondale from the state of Minnesota tried to stop the filibuster on the day before you came here, and I think you were short of 4 or 6 votes.
Four votes.
And that leads right into another question that you might want to answer with. Before the disclosure of the president's tax returns, the president's popularity in the polls was 26%, which is pretty low. It might be lower now after the tax returns have been published. A lot of people have strong feelings about that. But the Congress popularity
is even worse.
It's 21%.
Yes.
And people are disgusted with the United States Congress, House and Senate alike. Mm-hmm. They say you don't do anything there. You take up issues, but you don't accomplish anything. So what do you attribute to
that is part of the feeling. It is not exactly based on fact, Henry. I think there are many things wrong with Congress as an institution. But we passed a lot of good legislation that means so much to the American people, and much of it's been vetoed by the President of the United States. But we just finished passing a new minimum wage law, which is going to be very important. We passed some energy legislation, not nearly enough, because the President has vetoed the biggest bill that we had, which was a composite bill. We passed health legislation, we passed legislation that relates to higher education and elementary and secondary, and we'll pass more. But the problem in Congress is that the Congress of the United States needs to be totally modernized and reorganized, Henry. It is equipped and it is designed as if it was in the first part of the 20th century rather than the last quarter of the 20th century. It needs better staffing. It needs monitoring. It needs to set up a system to monitor its legislation. It needs to use computers for information retrieval. It needs, for example, let me say to the public that I think that Congress that handles a $300 billion budget ought to be open. Every committee, television and radio and press, no locked doors, that there ought to be television and radio coverage of the House and the Senate. At least the networks ought to have the privilege of coming in and putting up their television cameras, which we deny them. In other words, this is the people's business. And when you have the people's business in the sum of over $300 billion, it's not something that ought to be handled behind closed doors or just with certain parts of the media covering us. I want you to see what Hubert Humphrey does, not what somebody writes that I do. I want to be able to be seen like I'm seen right now on this television, not somebody interpreting what I said. And what you have in the print press all too often is what somebody thinks you said. But on radio and television, it's what you are and what you say that's there. And it ought to be covered by the American media on radio and television.
I don't want to go into too deep into that, but isn't there a potential danger that certain people are going to take advantage of it if everything was televised? Take the case of Senator Baker of Tennessee. There were millions of Americans who had never heard of Senator Howard Baker.
He suddenly even appears to be a potential presidential candidate in 1976, or maybe even before. Aren't you afraid that some people are going to take advantage of this?
That's always possible. We have rules in the Senate and in the House which prevent you from taking those advantages. And if the rules are not proper, we can redesign those rules for the modern media means. But I think the danger there is less than it is the way we presently operate. But that's not the only issue. Now, we were on the Allen matter, Senator Allen. He has a strong point of view. He's opposed to what we call public financing. Now, I want to say to your television audience, there are just two ways to finance political campaigns. One way is through private contributions. And that leads to trouble. No one is going to believe, me or anyone else, that a private contribution doesn't have some influence on you. And nothing is more disgusting, demeaning, nothing is more disturbing than a man that's a candidate for public office having to ask for help and for money. It is real, particularly when you run for national office. Now, let me be very honest. You don't run for national office with $10 contributions. It's impossible. The cost of media, the cost of television, the cost of travel, you know what it costs to rent an airplane to run around this country, the cost of radio, it runs into the millions and millions and millions of dollars. And it's gone up every year. Millions and millions, 50, 60 millions of dollars. Now, if you're going to raise that kind of money by private contributions, you're going to get some big ones. And when you get big ones, no matter whether it's properly recorded, everything is clear as can be, somebody's going to say, well, they bought influence. They bought influence. Now, the answer to it is what we've done. We've got you as a taxpayer, and you've got time between now and April 15th to check off in what we call the checkoff on the front page of that income tax, to put $2 to $4 in a political trust fund, which will be divided amongst the major and minor political parties on a formula agreed to by Republicans and Democrats and independents alike. And that will take out of politics any possibility of stain or shame or corruption. That will permit the candidate for president and vice president on any ticket to have enough money to run a campaign, not to buy his way into office. There will be limits as to how much you can spend. But you'll all be treated alike. Nobody will be able ever again to say, he's in the hands of the milk industry, or the doctors, or the labor movement, or the oil interests, or something else. I've been in politics long enough to speak very candidly. I'm sick of the whole mess when it comes to this business of campaign financing. When I ran in 68, we were $5 million in debt after we got through. I have spent 4 to 5 years of my life trying to get that debt reduced, and it was not fun. And when you read papers and have somebody try to make you look bad, when you know it's a lie, when you know it's only somebody trying to cover up for himself, you can't help but just feel like you want to grow up and get out of the whole cockeyed business. But I don't want to get out. I don't want people to cop out. I want a system that's clean. And the only way to clean it up is to get away from large political contributions.
We shall be back with the Honorable Senator U.S. H. Humphrey after a word from Wyoming Realty, your television open house host.
I'm not sure I won't get you lost.
Senator Humphrey, I'd like to get away from politics, everything's politics, but to some more substantial matter. And that is that in 1956, it's a long time ago, You introduced legislation to provide for an international food reserve.
Yes.
And a national domestic food and fiber reserve. And you held hearings on the bills. And the Department of Agriculture opposed them. The witness, one of the witnesses who appeared before this subcommittee in 1956 was Dr. Earl Butz, who was then Assistant Secretary of Agriculture, who is now the Secretary of Agriculture. And he said in March this year, 1974, that he was against a proposal for a government-owned food reserve. And on March 21 of this year, 1974, he said that, quote, a major crop failure in the United States is virtually impossible, and I see no prospect of widespread starvation abroad. Now, we know that there are African countries where the people are dying by the thousands.
Correct, sir.
What is the United States Congress going to do about it? 56 to 64 to 74 of my arithmetic is all right.
That's right.
It's 18 years that you have been working on it.
Yes.
What are we going to do?
Well, first of all, on the international side, regardless of what we do, other countries are setting up food reserves. They've come to that judgment. I was in Rome this November to the Food and Agricultural Conference, and in Munich on the World Protein Conference. I can assure you that the major countries and some of the less developed countries will be setting up food reserves because they cannot run the risk of running out of food. This is worse than running out of oil because lives are involved, not just convenience or jobs, but lives. Also, I have talked with Dr. Kissinger, I'm happy to tell you, and I believe it's fair for me to say that that in this last summer, I have written to President Nixon about the necessity of a World Food Conference. When Dr. Kissinger was being confirmed for Secretary of State, I brought it up to him and spent some hours with him. As a result, a World Food Conference has been called in which we are an active participant. So that the State Department is backing a World Food Program. The Department of Agriculture can't quite make up its mind. It's just as if we got two governments. Now, on the domestic side, let me just tell you why I want a reserve. First of all, we have no reserves today of any consequence. Ever since the Russian wheat deal and with bad crops in parts of the world, the reserves not only are down here, but throughout the world. Food reserves 5 years ago were 165 million tons of wheat. They're now 80. Every year it's been going down. We have 25 to 27 days of food left in the world. And a 10% crop failure, Mr. Butz or no Mr. Butz, well, in the United States, a 10% crop failure in corn and wheat and grain sorghums will mean a food catastrophe throughout the world. We're the largest food producers. We're the only reserve country outside of Canada of any consequence in the world. And if either Canada or the United States has any kind of bad weather, anything that really cuts into our wheat and our feed grains and our corn and our soybeans, four critical crops, the world will be shaken and the cost of food will skyrocket. Henry, the oil crisis has cost the less developed countries $10 billion of additional costs for fuel, $5 billion for additional food because of the high cost of food. These countries are broke and prostrate. 1 billion people today in their governments are bankrupt. And India faces a famine this year. As you well pointed out, West Africa, six countries in the Sahel, hundreds of thousands of people dead from starvation. Ethiopia, a major disaster. And here the Secretary of Agriculture says nothing is happening. It is ridiculous. Frankly, it is a shame. And we have got to be more sure for ourselves. The American people have suffered high food costs already. The American farmer doesn't want $10 wheat. He isn't asking for that. He wants a fair price for his product, for his dairy product, for his soybeans, for his corn and his wheat. My food reserve will provide the following protections. For the farmer, if he overproduces, a place for him to sell temporarily, so he gets a fair price. For the foreigner who wants to buy from us, a reliable supply. For the consumer, a fair price in the supermarket. And I don't ask the government to own it all. The reserves are modest. The government would own 1/3, 2/3 of it would be owned in the private trade. We're going to still pass that bill because we've got to. This great company can't afford to be without oil. The president says we're going to have independence, fuel. I'm for that. And you can't afford to be without adequate supplies of food. What kind of national security would that be?
We also cannot be without chemical fertilizer.
That's right.
And we have a very serious shortage there.
Yes. And high prices.
High prices, and we can't grow what you just said, the wheat and all the other agricultural products if we don't attack the problem of shortage of fertilizer.
Fertilizer and transportation are critical. A crop in the field doesn't mean anything to the people because it isn't the market. It's got to get to the market, to the cities, to where the population is. Fertilizer is in short supply here, but in the world, it's in terrible short supply. It's selling for $270 a ton right now in countries like Europe and Asia. It was selling for $50 a ton a year ago, $90 a ton 6 months ago. And in the United States, there's a fertilizer shortage that runs anywhere from 10 to 12%. Now, we've opened up new acreage, as you know. Now, the acreage that's been opened up recently, the new 20 million acres, is the less productive land, and it takes more fertilizer to get production out of it. And we have less fertilizer to put on it. That's why I've been concerned.
Senator Humphrey, I'd like to get back to what I said before, the Congress. Now, you spoke about energy. I'm being told that there were 25 different committees.
26, you're right.
26, what are? 26 different committees discussing the energy crisis. How can anything be done at all? The president called it a problem. Well, maybe it's not a crisis anymore.
There were 66 agencies in the executive branch. 66 little subdivisions of the executive
branch. Well, isn't it about time that somehow this is what you said before, the entire Congress, the House of Representatives, and the United States Senate are being reorganized so that some work can be done and something real achieved?
Yes, and that's why I introduced what we call the Modern Congress Act. One of the provisions in that act, which I'm fighting hard to get, and we'll get some of it, is a joint committee on atomic on energy and natural resources. Because other commodities are going to be in short supply. We need one committee between the House and the Senate, where all the facts on oil and coal and geothermal energy and solar energy and hydroelectric energy and all forms of energy, nuclear energy, one place where the facts are, what the shortage is, what the reserves are, what the supplies are, what the prices are. And there's where we make the recommendations to the legislative committees to do what needs to be done. Hubert Humphrey has introduced a joint committee bill, a bill to establish one committee to cover both houses of the Congress on energy so that we get a national policy. And we have legislation now from the president to set up the Federal Energy Office along with what we call the Energy Research and Development Agency with it. Now that's what we've got to do. And I must say as a member of Congress, and I've been there a long time, that it's going to take really just dogged determination to get it done, because nobody wants to give up their little kingdom. Every little subcommittee wants to do its little job. But you can't do that. The public is entitled to better service than what you're giving them.
You have introduced a lot of bills, and we don't have the time to mention them all. You have introduced the bill authorizing a five-year plan, $600 million for solar energy research development program. You have introduced the bill, legislation, I should say, to establish a national program of health care for all infants, children, and pregnant women, without regard to their place of residence or family income.
Can I just say a quick word on that?
Yes, sure.
We have Medicare for the senior citizens, as we should. I think we need kiddie care for our children. If we get at the problems of health and disability in children, indeed, when mothers are pregnant to the first few years of a child's life, we will save untold pain and cost in medical care and in human suffering. It would be a tremendous thing. Now, on the solar energy thing, that's where the energy is, the sun. And we haven't tapped the sun except for our space program. How do we make the space vehicles work? By solar energy, solar cells. We don't put a bucket of oil on the Apollo spacecraft, we put solar cells. The television broadcast from the moon came back through solar energy cells. Now we want to tap the sun's energy, and that's why I've said the time is at hand, if we're really going to do anything about energy, to tap the great source of energy. Instead of just offshore drilling and oil tars or oil sands and all of that, God Almighty put the sun up there, and it is nothing but a blazing source of energy. And we need to be able to bring it and use it industrially, commercially, and for residential use. And we can do it. We've proven that we can do it in the space program, and we ought to do it in the larger nature.
We have just a minute and a half left, Senator.
So fast, this is terrible.
Many senators have spoken out on, quote, impeachment, unquote, and, quote, resignation, unquote. You have been fairly quiet, or absolutely quiet. However, Neil McNeil of Time Magazine, on a television program, said the other day that you told him that you felt the president was politically wounded.
Yes, sir, I do.
We have about 1 minute.
Well, first of all, I haven't asked the president to resign because I didn't think he would. Secondly, I thought many people would misunderstand that, saying he's a disgruntled loser. I do think that the procedure which is being followed from the House of Representatives, as under the Constitution, the impeachment line is the proper way to go. The charges are carefully sifted. Charges, if there can be merit or meritorious, will be presented to the House. If the House votes on articles of impeachment, I am a juror in the Senate. And Henry, I do not believe that as a juror, I should prejudge until I have all of the facts. You know that I do not support the President in any of his policies. I've been very angry with him at times. But I want him to have a fair trial. And I'm going to be a juror that is fair. And when I sit in that jury in the Senate, I want to be able to vote on the basis not of my emotions or my prejudices or my partisanship, but on the basis of facts.
We'll be back with Senator UNH Humphrey after this word from Wyoming Realty, the television open house host.
And that's it, except for a clause.
The former Vice President of the United States, Senator Hewitt H. Humphrey, Democrat of Minnesota, thank you very much for being our guest. I wish you well indeed. I'm glad you're looking fine.
Thank you, Henry. I'm feeling very good. Except for
next Sunday for another Henry Wolf show. Now, this is Henry Wolf, and you all goodbye. Thank you for watching.